Our text today from Luke is known as the Annunciation, the announcement of the incarnation by the angel Gabriel to Mary. In the Catholic Church, the Annunciation is traditionally celebrated in March, which in our modern day calendar would be 9 months prior to the birth of Jesus. And this makes sense in our modern use of twisting the story to our needs, and in a logistical way, too. But I wanted to talk about this text today because the Christmas story is a story about birth at its root. It's a story also about waiting for birth and giving birth. Therefore, this moment where Mary learns of her pregnancy is critical to how we get to this moment of the manger scene that we all know so well. And it's vital to the reality of Jesus coming to live in our midst. So I'm going to talk about birth today. And as it is our second week of Advent, I'm also going to talk about peace today, as our children guessed so accurately this morning. And we talk about peace in this congregation pretty often. We talk about trying to figure out what peace means in the Middle East. We think about how we can have peace in this city divided by partisan politics. And we think about if we'll ever have peace in this building again with all the construction. So we're going to talk about birth and peace today. And I do want to talk about this using Gandhi's definition of peace in mind, which is that peace does not mean the absence of conflict. No, it means the ability to handle conflict with peaceful means. So last week, Tim started his sermon with a Thomas Berry poem, a poem titled The Peace of Wild Things that talks about the peace found in nature when despair grows all around us. And I'm gonna let him off the hook for using a peace poem during the Hope Week of Advent because Thomas Berry has another poem that speaks to our theme of birth and peace today. It's one of my favorite poems, and it's his manifesto called The Mad Farmer's Liberation Front. The poem offers quirky pieces of prophetic advice, like plant sequoias. Take everything that you have and be poor. Be joyful, though you have considered all of the facts. And towards the end of his poem, Berry addresses his audience with a challenge. Ask yourself, he says, will this action satisfy a woman satisfied to bear a child? Will this action disturb the sleep of a woman near to giving birth? How different would our world be if before every action we asked ourselves these two questions? What if our main compass for moral decision making was, will this action disturb the sleep of a woman near to giving birth? What if our main measurement for the well-being of our world was to consider this well-being before making any decision? And today, I want to push Berry's thoughts a little further and even challenge us to not think about only women that are near to giving birth, but all of the individuals who, like Mary, are facing a reproductive decision, who need to make some kind of choice, to consider how to make this world more peaceful for those people making those choices. I want to look at how Mary's choice plays out in our text. It's a common reading of this text to see Mary as a subdued servant in the passage. In fact, commentators call Mary all sorts of things: obedient, believing, devoted to Jewish law, submissive. But I believe that Mary here is courageous. She is brave, and she also embodies the ability to handle conflict with peaceful means. In our scriptures, the angel Gabriel appears twice before he appears to Mary, and in both instances, the visitation of the angel invokes fear and conflict. First, Gabriel appears in our Hebrew scriptures in the book of Daniel. And Daniel, who is a strong man, appears, according to the text, terrified of Gabriel. And he falls prostrate on his knees before the angel. Next, we see Gabriel again right before our passage in Luke, visiting Zechariah, the father of John the Baptist. And Zechariah, like Daniel, was troubled when Gabriel came and did not believe the angel, because according to the scripture, fear fell upon him. But when the angel Gabriel comes to Mary, she does not shudder in fear like the two men before her. Instead, she speaks with humble curiosity. Instead, she is able to interact with a peaceful mind frame. Denise Levertov wrote a poem that captures Mary's peaceful strength in this moment. She offers an interpretation of the interaction between Gabriel and Mary, claiming that there was this one moment when God waited to hear Mary's response. She says that the spirit of Gabriel was suspended in the air, waiting for Mary to accept or refuse, a choice so integral to humanness. And she goes on to say that Mary did not cry out, "I cannot," or "I am not worthy," nor "do I not have the strength." Instead, Mary was the bravest of all humans. Her courage was unparalleled, and she was illuminated with consent. In this passage, Mary makes a choice. There was a moment of hesitation, yes, when she asks, "How can this be?" But after that moment of curiosity, I envision Mary taking a deep breath. Before she courageously responds, "Here I am, Lord." This is a moment of peace, of handling conflict or of news with peace, of being content with one's assertion and trusting in God and the community to support your decisions. However, in this world, at this time, the moment one hears one is pregnant is not always a moment of peace. For many women, there is no angel that comes down from the sky to inform them that something is growing in their womb. For many women, that moment of taking a deep breath and making a choice is filled with deep fear and anxiety. Making a reproductive decision like the one Mary made can mean many things in today's vernacular. A reproductive decision can mean getting the news of infertility and the possibility of in vitro fertilization, the decision to take birth control or not, the decision to take on another member of the family via formal or informal adoption. It can mean deciding not to bring a child into this world through abortion. It can mean deciding to use a surrogate for childbearing. All of these decisions are intimate and intricate, and they include trust and hope and absolutely some sort of peace in one's state of mind. So how can we, as people of faith, support women, trans men, non-binary individuals, humans with divine worth, who find themselves in a world of chaos when making a reproductive decision. How can we make more peace for individuals who are like Mary, who may be unwed, impoverished, a refugee, and are facing a decision? There are tangible things we can do, of course. Volunteer to be an abortion clinic escort, become a monthly donor for Planned Parenthood, support healthy sex education programs in our congregations like OWL. We can become aware of the domestic and international policies that restrict access to health care. But as people who believe that God came in the form of a baby, who believe that Mary made a sacred decision, I think that the biggest thing that we can do to support the Marys of this world when they are faced with a decision is to create holy ground around reproductive decision making. So what does this mean? In the book of Genesis, God appears before Moses in the form of a burning bush on Mount Sinai. And through fiery embers, a voice declares to Moses, "Do not come any closer. Take off your sandals, for you are on holy ground." In this instance, holy ground is deemed sacred by the presence of God, who is the very essence of holiness. And in our reality, affirming holy ground is a lot larger than just taking off our shoes and being barefoot. Rather, holy ground means acknowledging that every time a person makes a reproductive decision, this decision is also the very essence of holiness and must be respected and supported. Holy ground was made at my former congregation, Judson Memorial Church, in New York City in 1966, when a woman knocked on the minister's door and asked for help to end a pregnancy. Still years before Roe versus Wade, the minister at the time, a man named Howard Moody, got in touch with a friend who knew a doctor that was willing to provide an abortion. He knew that this individual's choice to terminate her pregnancy was just as sacred as Mary's choice to continue hers. After this interaction, Moody and 12 other faith leaders in New York founded the Clergy Consultation Service on Abortion to offer women with unwanted pregnancies counseling and referrals to safe abortions. By 1973, this network had spread across the country to 21 states and included roughly 1,400 clergy members that helped what's estimated to be hundreds of thousands of women access safe abortions. Creating holy ground in the 1960s and 70s does not look too different from creating holy ground today. Just this past week in Ohio, reproductive activists and faith leaders stood in front of the Ohio State Senate to testify against a bill that would outlaw abortion past 6 weeks and also criminalize physicians who provide abortion care. Creating holy ground may look like a Senate testimony, but it'll look different in each space. Sometimes creating holy ground means just listening or answering a young person's question about their sexual health with respect and care. Creating holy ground today means that affirming a person's beliefs of grief or depression or anger or sadness and telling them that in the eyes of you and in the eyes of God, these feelings are valid. Creating holy ground today may mean standing strongly with your feet cemented, saying me too. Creating holy ground today means acknowledging that each person, regardless of race or economic class, immigration status, or sexual preference, should be able to live in a state of peace and not fear when making a reproductive decision. It's very clear that the world as it is right now, to remember Barry, is not in a state of peace where a woman about to give birth can rest very soundly. Rather, we are in a world where women holding their babies seeking asylum are tear gassed, and where access to birth control and health care are so dependent on the color of one's skin and their zip code. We are in a world where just a few minutes down the road in DC, 41 women die for every 100,000 births, which is the highest maternal mortality rate in the country. It's our call as people of faith who believe that Mary was a courageous mother and had free will to make a choice, and that our God was a baby who needed milk and love to survive, to create this holy ground around reproductive health. It's our job to bring peace into spaces where difficult decisions are made. So in this quest, let us remember that Advent, this time we are in now, is a time for holy waiting. Just as those 9 months before a baby is born is a time of holy waiting. Just like waiting to see the line on a pregnancy test is a moment of holy waiting. Just like waiting in line for an abortion at Planned Parenthood is holy waiting. My hope for us this Advent is that we wait together, with our feet planted in holy ground, using our bodies and minds and prayers to create more peace. So may it be. Amen.